payment is a trust business. Chan will trust you to give you their business.
Did you know this was the scale of Lotto we would get to?
If no one told me to be at this thing, AJ, I was like, that's not true.
You're operating over 30 markets, require light systems in every market. What did you do from the beginning?
So I get an email by on Monday morning, rejected. Tuesday morning, I'm preparing
again. Back at it again straight away.
And they were like, yo, what's going on here? I'm ready for that rejection. We're the most licensed non-bank entity in Africa right now.
Who is GB?
When I started this company, I had a full afro. I'm just a...
Welcome to The Startup Leap, the number one podcast interviewing startup founders who have taken the leap.
On The Startup Leap, we hear real, raw, and relatable stories of how they've navigated taking the leap. We're your hosts.
I'm Yvonne.
And I'm Maria.
And this is The Startup Leap podcast.
Any statements made by Maria, Yvonne, or The Startup Leap guests are solely their view and are not advice.
Today, we have someone who founded one of Africa's largest payments company. Flutterwave is now one of the most valued African startups at $3 billion valuation. It serves almost a million businesses. It touches over 30 African currencies. And its goal is to enable payments for businesses and their customers across Africa. GB, we met almost 9 years ago. Did you know that this was the scale that Flutterwave would get to? Was this your ambition all along?
Let me start by saying thanks for inviting me into this podcast. I recall when I was chasing you back in the day to use Flutterwave. And I recall you giving me a lot of product feedback.
Yeah.
And that was very instructive for us. Going back in time, we did not know we'd be here today, to be very honest. We're just thinking about doing what we love to do. We wanted to make a product that people would like to use. The problem we saw in the market. Quick background, I started my career with PayPal in the UK, worked for a bunch of companies all across the world, from GT Bank to Standard Bank, to Sterling Bank, to Access Bank. Started a company that did payment that was acquired by a bank. This was my first rodeo.
Yeah.
But the problem we saw back then was the defragmentation of payment in Africa. In every country in Africa you go to, payment works really well, to be honest. Africa gets a bad rep for not being advanced, but we're one of the most advanced countries in payment. Real-time transfers have been available in Nigeria, in Ghana, in Kenya for decades. M-Pesa is fantastic. In Nigeria today, if I wire money to somebody through NIPS, they get the money instantly. That is the Africa standard that people don't talk about a lot. What we decided to do was to solve the probability of all these amazing payment types. In Nigeria, NIMS works pretty well. In Kenya, M-Pesa works amazingly well. Ghana, there's MTN Mobile Money, Airtel Money in Rwanda. The problem we're trying to solve for is, if a business in Johannesburg wants to get paid by a customer in Lagos, or a better example, a business in Accra wants to get paid by a customer in Lagos, before Flutterwave, if they do a wire transfer, that money goes from Lagos to New York, New York to Accra. It made no sense because money doesn't move, instruction moves. If that merchant knows that the payment is confirmed, they will release goods. Know that in day one or day two or day three, they will get paid. And that's what we're solving for. We're solving for making Africa the payment hub of the world, literally, which is a very tall ambition. From my banking experience, large corporate who wanted to pay salaries of staff all over Africa, and it was hard to do. How do we solve that problem and solve it well at scale? That's why from day one, our goal was not Nigeria or Kenya. It was Africa. It was trying to get it done. But yes, we were not aware we would be like this today, but we knew the goal we wanted to solve for, and we went ahead on that goal.
Yeah. When did you decide that you were going to go ahead to build Flutterwave? What was the decision?
When I couldn't solve it in a bank, because I was an entrepreneur where I was working. I worked for very amazing employers who gave me the room to innovate in my employment. It was when I saw that the construct of my employers could not solve some problems. They all agreed with me, and they've all supported the former employers are partners today of Flutterwave. And that is really amazing for me to see. I recall a couple of months ago, I went with my board to see one of my employers, Standard Bank, and when I got to their office, they had welcome back on the wall. And then they were showing some of my board members my seats. Oh, and wow. I was like, oh, that's true. That was just, you were in that corner. Yes, I was in that corner. It was amazing. I had bosses like Wu of Sterling Bank, who is now the MD of the bank. Yeah, amazing gentleman.
That is great.
You know, Herbert of Bellet Memory. And that was how we built this company. We built this company on the back of our network and relationships at the beginning. My co-founders, Leke and Inyi, great, amazing guys. We all brought what we know how to do best to the table to start this company and get it done properly.
I love how you set out with a thesis to make payments in Africa seamless, particularly across borders. You set out to build a regulated product. How did you go about building that product from zero to one? Given you're operating over 30 markets, you require licenses in every market. What did you do from the very beginning, particularly being a regulatory product, and how you thought about scale across borders with your customers?
That is why we have battle scars. Battle scars in reality, figuratively, mentally, emotionally. Yes, it's really hard building from scratch. It takes a lot from you. When I started this company, I had a full afro.
Like when Barack...
To give you context.
After when Barack Obama goes into the White House. Yeah.
Yeah, so...
The engine that comes with it.
Exactly. So I have a not afro right now. So I think at first, most entrepreneurs, we also included, we thought the problem was technology. It wasn't technology. It was actually a trust business. Technology is a trust enabler. It was a trust business. Payment is a trust business, and people need to trust you. Banks need to trust you to use their rails. Merchant will trust you to give you their business. It's not like SaaS where it's software. What I see, what I get, it's different. Even though we use software to enable payment, but it's really a trust business. And we learned that both the good and the hard way, right? But in the last 8 years, we've done pretty well. We're the most licensed non-bank entity in Africa right now. Nigeria, Ghana, Rwanda, Uganda, Tanzania, Egypt, Zambia. We are licensed in all these countries and markets. It is hard. Each of them took a conscious effort. In some countries, we have what I want. For example, in Nigeria, we have a switching license, payment license, remittance. In Rwanda, we have EMI. Like, we have in the UK, we're licensed. In the US, we have 30 state licenses. Each application submitted differently. We want to be here for the long term. We also want to build a very sustainable business. And to do so, we have to ensure we got the right approvals to do what we do. And so that's the journey. We keep on trying to apply because beyond the application itself, it gives us a trust that a third-party regulator has found you worthy. It's a privilege, frankly. A license is a privilege. You don't pay for it. You apply, you go through a process, they find you worthy, and then they give it to you. And applying, getting it granted, maintaining the licenses, those are the things that we have to do to build that trust. And I'm happy that we are constantly proving that in our business. We've had our fair share of challenges. Wasn't that we tried to do, we try to be resilient. There was one license that we applied for where we applied like 5 times. So what I used to do was that I would plan for a rejection and I would have my name's application ready. So if I get an email by on Monday morning, rejected. Tuesday morning, I'm preparing
back again.
Again
straight away.
And they were like, yo, what's going on here?
These guys are ready.
I was like, I'm ready for that rejection. Mentally, I'm ready to be rejected.
Yeah.
It's crazy, but it's what it is. Now that we've built that trust with them, they give us the licenses. So it's amazing to see that play out over time. Tech doesn't make the company, it's the people. Our secret sauce is the people that have worked there, both in the past and now, and we work here in the future. I'm here right now. Payments are not processing. People are processing payments wherever they are in the world. But people are somewhere making it happen. And I think that is what makes everything work for us.
I want to go back a bit. When you started, as you were pitching to potential partners, either international or investors, and trying to sell this vision, what were the common things you heard at the time? And how different are they to the reality now?
We've got a small favor to ask. If you're enjoying the podcast, hit that subscribe button.
Yep, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else, subscribing and following us is the easiest way that you never miss an episode.
To be honest, it was just intrigue. There's not been a lot of education about Africa out there. So the first thing we had to do was to first educate before you even pitch. So in your pitch, you have to educate. You have to let people understand the opportunity here and the realistic ROI that you can get, and also the problems that we're solving for. The issues we have in Africa are the opportunities in Africa as well. Depending on how you see it, that's where I see it. If you can solve for that properly, that will be huge. I spent time in China in 2018, part of some eFounders program that Alibaba Group organized. And I saw firsthand how entrepreneurs solve problems to help a company to grow and scale. They solve the commerce, payment, logistics intersection, and that leapfrogged China massively, right? That's what we need to do in Africa as well. We need to solve problems for ourselves. We need African entrepreneurs to solve African problems. Obviously, we might need outside capital, which is why you have to be for best practice, global excellence from day one. I call it Africa ingenuity, global excellence, right? You have to build the Africa, bring the African nuances to the table, and then use that to build. But again, shout out to my investors. They've been folks who support the company, who try to understand the context, the intent, and intent matters a lot. That's the difference between the reaction you give to something. If the intent is great, you're able to understand the perspective. It's really a function of having the right investors, the right partners who have an interest in Africa. That makes a difference. And that is what has also helped us today. We've been very lucky and blessed as a company.
There's challenges, but those are the opportunities, right? If you look at all the data, the demographics of Africa, it definitely points to the future being Africa. However, there's still this challenge when it comes to fundraising today. I know that you speak to a lot of entrepreneurs on the continent, and I think one thing that Flutterwave has done really well is storytelling and sharing the story of the opportunity on the continent, particularly when it comes to payments. But I'm just curious, was that intentional? What advice would you give to entrepreneurs who are setting out to raise today, where investors may not understand the local context and so on? How did you navigate that?
I think my team is actually very incredible. All the way from the beginning, right? From the first people we hired in marketing in Flutterwave, even Iny as well, great storyteller, my co-founder, Leke, we're all telling stories in multiple shapes or form. I always prefer to tell my story with product and technology. Some people are great at doing these things differently. We've been looking to have a variety of people in the company who have different skill sets to tell our stories properly. And that's helped us a lot. What is important now, right now, is profitability, building a proper business from day one. I think for us in Africa will benefit massively from a lot of small companies. We're hiring 10, 20, 30 people and they're doing pretty well. I don't think the people should not chase a billion-dollar company. Right. We would do a lot better if we have, imagine having a million,
yeah.
20 million-dollar companies.
Yeah.
That would make a massive difference in Africa. America is like that, the country of entrepreneurs and small businesses, because they have so many small businesses who are in their own small niche, small state or city, employing people, doing really well. My advice for budding entrepreneurs is always, look, stay true to your goals, stay true to your North Star, things will go wrong.
Especially for those, I would love to hear that, especially for those who are experienced operators like you, they're builders. They have massive ambitions because Imagine you pitching this pitch like 9 years ago saying, see, there's a world where there's a trust layer and we want people to be able to trade with each other as easily as people trade with each other across the world. What would you like say to them, that disjoint between what they see, what the current market is, but what the opportunity could be?
I think people need to just forge on. I think right now, thankfully in Africa, right, there's a lot of African VCs who understand the content. I wasn't there before. That's one of the reasons why I got closer to you, Maria, as well, because I saw the opportunity in Africans funding Africa, because you know what not to fund and what to fund, what's on ground, the reality of things. And I think you won't find on Google that you would know, because obviously you're in the market. And that's why I think it's very good right now that's happening. So I think that makes it easier to raise capital. But African VCs will not fund a company who is just trying to build something for business sake. Mm. They want to see you build a proper business. They want to see you have an impact. You have to be for profit and for good at the same time. Unfortunately, it's the continent that we are in. And that's why I think my advice would be just keep going, knowing that it is not easy to start. But once you get started, it might be smoother. But again, that's also a probability, you're not sure. I encourage people to do what they want to do, but build a small, profitable business. That also works.
Yeah. I would love to segue into you, GB. We were just saying that you don't do that many podcasts. I think that my own thesis is that because you're a builder, you want to build.
Heads down.
And you said it earlier with the personalities of the co-founders. You said like everyone brings their skill sets and expresses themselves differently. I'd love to get a sense of who you are, because I think entrepreneurs imprint themselves into their businesses. They bring the passion, the drive, they bring the ambition. Who is GB? Give us something.
I'm just a builder, software engineer background. I love to solve problems. That's one of my core,
yeah.
Right? I think I've also been incredibly blessed by the people around me, in the sense that FlutterWave today is a function of everybody that has contributed to make it work, from my colleagues to friends to family, yeah, to co-founders, to people who have left amazing jobs to join me in the mission of the company. By the way, I did a podcast, I think, a year ago with a professor from Georgetown.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's available online. So I think this is my second one. But I think it's a trust thing. I just want to talk to people that I trust and want to talk to.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I find here, being able to just be myself around the microphone.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting. But yeah, I like Formula One. I like NBA. Yes.
Okay. Would you have been a Formula One driver, like a basketballer in your previous life?
When I was younger, I had asthma, so I couldn't have done that.
Okay.
But I love NBA. I'm Team Steph Curry.
Really?
I'm Team Lewis Hamilton. I love soccer, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Who's your favorite football team?
Arsenal. Goodness.
They're on the up. They're doing well these days.
Where these days? I used to love traveling, but not anymore. I like to stay in one place.
I bet you also travel a lot for work. I feel like people romanticize traveling. And then when you start traveling for work, you're like, look, it's inconvenient.
There was one day I was flying from Atlanta to Lagos, and I got to the Delta Lounge. And I said, welcome back. I was like, what do you mean?
They recognize you.
Like, you realize that you're a frequent flyer.
You want your ginger hair, right? Yeah, I travel a lot. It's ridiculous. But that is getting better now. As FlutterWave is scaling, we have amazing leaders in the company. We have Mitesh, who just joined us recently from Citibank as our CFO. He's doing a lot of the travels right now. I have Bridget, who looks after strategy at FlutterWave. I have Expansion. You know, we have got Bej, engineering, our CTO. We have a bunch of folks in the company today who are incredible. Bankole looks after legal and regulatory affairs, more compliance. Amaresh, risk. So these leaders they've taken a lot off my plate, and they are forging on driving value in the company. And of course, Wendy, if I don't mention her name, there'll be a problem.
Okay, fantastic. So you grew up in Nigeria, Africa, right? So
yes, proper African boy.
See, the reason why I was saying is because you mentioned something earlier, that understanding the nuance of the continent probably was very influential in how you thought about what was possible.
Beyond growing up in Africa, I worked in Africa. I saw problems in Africa. Okay. You know, African corporate are my thing. Africa is my charm.
You lived in the UK. For how long were you with PayPal here?
Briefly, worked with them as an engineer when I left school. Okay. This one working with PayPal here,
So I'm trying to understand where in your upbringing the resilience comes from. Because to build something that has these many licenses, these many obstacles, but on the flip side, opportunities, like you said, it's never one without the other. Where do you think that comes from? And maybe also, everyone romanticizes like the idea of starting a business and like building an ambitious company. What's your thoughts on those two?
So resilience is an important word to me personally, because obviously I believe a lot in that. My resilience comes from, I don't know, is it family? Is it my upbringing? It's a mixture of all of those things together, in my opinion. My drive comes from just wanting to be better. I want to be better. I want to build better solutions. I want to solve problems. I want to go from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5. I believe in incremental growth. That's helped me a lot. I think growing up also had an effect on that. Having family that are constantly pushing you. You get a grade from school. They're asking you, why didn't you get the next grade? Why are you not the best?
Traditional African.
Typical African parent.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then also seeing having families who are trailblazers. I had aunties, cousins who are amazing people.
You also know that at some point you would be an entrepreneur yourself.
I didn't start to be an entrepreneur. Though it's always been there, to be honest. I said my first company was doing Wi-Fi infrastructure.
Really?
Yes. I sold out to a lot of companies in the UK. Okay. Yes, before I joined PayPal, and also across Africa as well. So I think for me, it's always just been, if there's something I want to do and it's not available, why can't I build it? And that's why I love engineering. I love coding. Because of that, I can build things that I don't see available. And that, I think, has been one of the drivers for me as a person. But I thought about building in safe spaces. Mm. And so why I work for companies and I enjoy working for them. If I could solve the flutter wave problem in a bank, I would have done it in the bank, right? But it was when I couldn't solve it in the bank that I felt like it could be an opportunity to do it in a non-bank setting. And that was why Flutter Wave was birthed, right? But I think I just love to solve problems and to build a solution.
I guess just looking back, it's almost 10 years, right, since Flutter Wave started.
The only funny thing, someone told me to be at least a 10-year engineer. I was like, that's not true. 2 years I'll be done with this thing. What's the big deal? They were like, we told you, it will take at least 10 years to build a company that's sustainable. At least 10 years.
I love that.
I'm like, you're right, sir.
Yes. Time flies when you're having fun.
Yes.
Looking back, what's the one thing that you're most proud of?
I'm proud of the impact we've made. People thought it was impossible. Now people know it's possible. That impact, I'm proud of that. I'm proud of seeing people who have passed through Flutter Wave infrastructure go out there and be stars and they're shining.
Build businesses themselves even as well.
Build businesses. Beyond that, we have people who have let us work for Google, American Express, Meta, Netflix, RDN. We have people that their career was shaped in Flutter Wave and they went out there and they excelled. I love to see that. Mm. Because a lot of them are started companies, they've let to do things. I'm like, well done, this is good. I think that's interesting. Now people know it's possible to start from scratch and go out there and just lay all on the table and just get to work. I think we've shown that it's possible. Now we're also showing that you can also be resilient, you can stumble. You can also keep working, yeah. Right? You can see issues, you can solve them. And it's not going to be easy. Nobody promised easy. I recall a verse in the Bible about nobody telling it to be easy, but it will be worth it. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. And from the impact perspective, $16 billion transacted. I think sometimes these numbers, you can throw them, but those are businesses. Those are businesses that have moved money using your infrastructure. Those are businesses that have been enabled. What was more difficult than you predicted? What was the thing you didn't expect?
I think for each phase we are in, yeah, we have a unique set of challenges, mm, that we need to solve. When we get that done, we turn that phase, another set comes, yeah, up, and that's just the way it is. I'm not surprised. I recall one of the banks I worked in over 100 years, and they were telling me, GB, you're just year 8 plus in Flutter Wave. Remember that. Mm. So don't think that you're going to build the year 100 capacity in 8 years. It's not possible. And whilst you compare our result with yours, you should compare like for like. Go back and compare year 8 of this bank. Then you see that you're actually not doing badly.
Incredibly well, actually, so, when you compare properly.
Yeah, so you need to just keep going. And when I speak to people that have done it before, people like Herbert, people like Tony, people that have built companies in emerging market, they tell me, GB, just keep going. It's not easy. It was easy for us as well. But Africa needs to build Africa, right? Yeah. You have to keep going. You have to do this. I think that is very encouraging to hear and to see amazing people like that who have done this in a scale and they keep going as well, right? Yeah.
One thing that I've found very interesting about Flutter Wave is the pace in which you ship out new products and constantly bring out new features, new offerings. I'd love you to talk a little bit about how, after coming up to 10 years, how that's still evolving and how the DNA within Flutter Wave has enabled that.
I think we've evolved over the years now. In recent years, we are still shipping, but we're shipping responsibly, if that makes sense. And we're also shipping with scale in mind. There's a time when a tiny change is just a tiny change. Now, mm-hmm, a tiny change is a common customer saying, oh my gosh, my pen's not working anymore. Like, so many customers, so many impact. We have to be careful how we ship. I'm happy with the team has evolved to that level right now. And I see the maturity in what we build. Now we're shipping. An example is SendUp, for example. SendUp is a very matured product.
And that's the remittance app. What does Send do?
Yeah, it allows Africans in diaspora to send money back home. Anybody in the US, UK, to send money back home to Africa. Very beautiful, seamless product. And it works seamlessly as well. Another one is our V3 of our APIs, where we allow... Now, APIs are much more robust, backward compatible. We allow so many payment types work on our platform right now through one API. And we've fixed a lot of the issues that we had in the past on those APIs as well. But the point really is, we're now in a mature stage of the company. We're taking grown-up language right now, and that is important for us. And that's why you see people like Desk join us from Citi, people like Bankoli, ActiveVisa, join Flutter Wave, people like Bridget, PayPal, a decade plus. And that's because we are now at that stage where we're building for scale, right?
You've spoken about your ambitions to go public.
Our ambitions are really one, grow revenue, grow our margins, make our OPEX make sense, and be cash flow positive, and keep on being cash flow positive. That's the goal I have right now. My immediate goal is not to go public.
It's just that comes as an eventuality to...
Once I'm cash flow positive, which is the goal I have right now, then I can have all the options available to me. But the goal right now is just double down, go deeper, not wider, be there for my customers, get them to grow and to stay and expand their business. Yeah.
What's your view of the future of payments in Africa?
African payments will keep evolving. I see a future whereby contactless will be a big deal very soon. I see a future whereby pay your bank transfer, open banking will scale. There's a lot for us to build in Africa still, right? But I'm happy that things are shaping up right now, which is good. For context, pay your bank transfer as a payment type did not exist 5 years ago.
Yeah, I remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now it's one of the biggest payment types on the continent. Right? And that is incredible, right? Non-card payments are on the rise massively. Obviously, they have less fraud risk, easier to settle. That is where we're going to as a country. So I see that happening across, but I see tokenization of account payments also happening as well.
One of the things we like to do just as we wrap up the episode is go into more. The idea is that we have people who are listening, who are builders, who are thinking, who have problems they want to solve, but they want to learn from the best, from people who've gone through the fire, as it were. If you could go back to GB and tell him something just as he started Flutterwave with your co-founders, what would you say? 10 seconds. It doesn't have to change what you do now, but what do you think you needed to hear at that point?
So I have never romanticized entrepreneurship. People should not. It's hard work. If you can solve that problem within the confinement of a well-deserving organization, please, that's also a privilege. Please do it. Let's be problem-solving focused. Not really about the method. You can go intra or entrepreneur. It doesn't really matter. That's very important. It's hard work building anything from scratch. And I think it makes you appreciate your employers a lot more when you do it by yourself. You're like, oh my gosh, now I understand why this, why that. So I would say just focus on the goal you want to solve, not the process. Look for the best way to solve that problem and get it done. At the end of the day, make sure you make an impact. That's important. Africa needs that right now. Yeah.
And what are some of the resources that helped you along the way, whether it be books, podcasts, that you know some of our listeners could potentially tap into as well?
I think experience helped me a lot. Mm-hmm. Working for companies, going through the ranks, helped me a lot to see how things actually work in real life. Those are one of my biggest ones. Also, having mentors, people that are there to just listen to you, whatever the issue is, and just give you their own version of how you can solve the problem. My co-founders helped. The people that I work with in Flutterwave, they inspire me a lot. I learn from them every day, which is amazing. So all of that helps to build, in my opinion, where we are today as a company.
Guest you'd recommend to come on the Startup Leap next, who would you recommend?
Does it matter the continent?
Yeah.
Okay. I would choose Africa, and I would recommend Richmond of Invest Bamboo. Richmond and Yamo, gateway combo.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
Thank you for spending time with us. We enjoyed this.
Same here. Thanks for having me.
Leave a review. Tell us what you think of this episode on all of our platforms at the Startup Leap Pod. Do you have a question? Ask us and we'll ask our guests. Go to thestartupleap.io. See you next time.